You're listening to WNJC 1360 AM in Washington Township, New Jersey.
And hi, this is Rob Cole, and it's the Rob Cole Bottom Up Radio Show. I was waiting for the music intro to come in. Oops. And so we're here. We're going to laugh about that. It's no big deal. And it's another hour of talking about progressive news and opinion. The Rob Cole Bottom Up Radio Show is sponsored by www.opednews.com, where you're going to find the news you don't find in the regular newspapers. And the big story lately revolves around two things. There are two stories we're going to talk about tonight. One is torture and investigating people who authorized war crimes, who turned America into a dirty word all around the world. Now, America doesn't deserve to have a reputation of being a country that tortures, a country that does horrible things, a country that engages in war crimes. But people made the decision to do that. Then they blamed it on the little guys. They blamed it on the sergeants and the lieutenants at Abu Ghraib. But it was the higher-ups who made the decisions. It was higher-ups who brought in lawyers who sold their souls, who corrupted the justice system, who corrupted the values of America. People like John Yoo, who gave legal opinion saying, it's okay to torture people. It's okay to do horrible things to them that throughout American history, no other leaders felt it was okay to do. And the ironic thing is that their decisions literally could have decided that because it was okay to torture prisoners, it could be okay to torture any prisoner in any jail, in any city, state, or county. So just imagine, somebody goes in and the local sheriff thinks, oh, this guy knows something. Who knows what? The sheriff says, well, I can do some waterboarding, or I can make this prisoner hang naked from his cell, and I can play loud music and keep lights on all night, and I can throw water on him, and I can embarrass him, and I can shame him with his religion. And we did this in Abu Ghraib. We did this in Guantanamo. And the lawyers now say that because these decisions suggested that this was okay to do with prisoners of war, it would also be okay to do it with any prisoner in America. So your kid gets busted for having a little bit of pot or underage drinking. And the local cop decides, I'm going to find out who he got it from. And he waterboards him? Makes him stand naked? This is what America's come to? No. God damn no! The people who made the decisions that this was okay, Donald Rumsfeld, Dick Cheney, George Bush, Antonio Gonzalez, these men are criminals, and they deserve to go to jail. And they deserve to go to jail because they have shamed you. They have shamed America, and they've put Americans at risk. Their decisions to engage in torture have been used by terrorists as the most effective recruiting tool in the history of terrorism and in the history of the United States. Yet we hear Obama's not going to go after the CIA agents or the military people who actually implemented the torture, who followed the orders. I'm kind of half okay with that. You know, the people were prosecuted and convicted of engaging in war crimes because they did what they were told to do in World War II. But Obama is saying, and others are saying, that these guys just obeyed orders. Okay. But the people who gave the orders, the people who made the policies, these people deserve to be tried in American courts and international courts. And they deserve the absolute punishment. You know, on Sunday, Rahm Emanuel told the talk show host, nobody's going to get prosecuted. But then Obama turned it around. I'm hoping that's the beginning of a schism, a crack that's opening up between Emanuel and Obama, because Obama has the potential to be a great president, and it's not going to happen with Emanuel. Emanuel's too much of an insider when it comes to lobbyists. He's too close to AIPAC and the Israeli lobby. He's too conservative. See, I'm beyond liberal. I'm a progressive. I'm looking for changes that really defend the Constitution. You know, the funny thing is, a lot of right-wingers are, too. A lot of conservatives want to protect the Constitution. We each have different amendments we're interested in. But there are more areas in common than one might think about. So, if you're listening to this and you're a conservative and you think it's a good idea to protect the Constitution, maybe we can find some common ground there. So I'm waiting. We've got two great guests on tonight. They're both writers with Op-Ed News. That's opednews.com. And if you haven't checked opednews.com out, you want to if you care about America, if you care about the future of freedom and liberty and the Constitution and democracy. It's www.opednews.com. Sponsors this radio show, the Rob Call Bottom Up Radio Show, WNJC 1360 AM. We have as our guests tonight Dave Lindorf. He's a renowned writer, columnist. He's written for a plethora of top level publications. And then we have Jason Leopold, who is a former writer for the L.A. Times and the Wall Street Journal. And we're going to be talking about two things. One is the torture and the investigations. And the other is about the word that a member of Congress was bugged. Her conversation was wiretapped, and then the information that was obtained was used by the former Attorney General, the one who was shamed into resigning, Gonzalez. It was used by him to blackmail her to support legislation that the Bush administration was pushing for. Can you imagine this now? The Bush administration is engaging in spying. They spy on members of Congress. They get information that can be used against the members of Congress to influence, to blackmail the members of Congress. Does something about that sound horribly wrong, so wrong that people should go to jail? Maybe that's why the members of Congress allowed the bills to pass that allowed the continuation of this kind of spying, this FISA spying, So that's what we're going to hear about from Dave Lindorf, and we're expecting him to call in any minute now. Sometimes I don't even know if they're there yet. Are you there yet, Dave? Ooh, he's not there. And just imagine that. Just imagine that the person you represented is spied on by the opposing party. J. Edgar Hoover used to do that kind of thing. He was he terrorized the members of Congress. He terrorized presidents. It shouldn't happen. Things are very broken in America. It's not just our economy. The economy is broken because we had leaders who let things go on with no regulation. And now we're paying the price for it. So, any moment now we're going to get Dave Lindorf on. And I'm wondering if I'm going to check my email to see if maybe he's having a problem here. No email. I'm expecting him on any moment now. So, Obama, the Wall Street Journal says, Obama opens a door to inquiry on terror interrogations.
Dave Lindorf.
Oh, good. You're there, Dave. Great.
Hey, Rob. I had to take somebody home to in the car, so I'm on the cell right now for the next half hour.
Okay. Well, we'll see how that works. Cells
okay. are
as good on the radio as landlines, but we'll see how it goes. So you wrote an article today. I was talking a little bit about it. Why don't you tell us about the article and what it means?
Well, the story, you told people what the story is about the word that Jane Harman, the congresswoman from who used to be the Democrats' head of the Intelligence Committee, was taped by the NSA during an investigation they were doing of a suspected Israeli agent. Then the FBI was pursuing that case of her because she actually negotiated on that tape deal where she was going to help to try to reduce the charges against two AIPAC members who were being charged with espionage. And in return, the Israeli agent told her on the phone that he would get AIPAC to donate money to Nancy Pelosi so that she would name Harman the chair of the new Democratic-run Intelligence Committee. So that was the basic story. Then there's another part of the story, which I think is more serious, and that was that, and this was reported in Congressional Quarterly, they broke the story, that Alberto Gonzalez, the then Attorney General, interceded with the FBI and got them to drop the case against Harman because he said they needed the Bush administration needed her to help them convince the New York Times to kill or postpone past the election the story that James Risen was doing revealing the whole NSA spying program. So it was this wonderful irony that, you know, Jane Harman was caught in the NSA spying and she was being pressured, blackmailed would be a good word, to do the administration's bidding and get the Times not to reveal the spying program that had caught her.
It's obscene.
It is obscene, but I think the real significance of the story is that it showed that the Bush administration was not above using taped transcripts by the NSA as blackmail against a member of Congress. And you know, what I wrote was that, you know, people had been wondering why for 8 years the Congress has just sat back and done nothing while this Bush wrecking crew just tore into the Constitution and, not insignificantly, undermined the powers of Congress itself. And it was kind of hard to understand why these fairly aggressive members of Congress who in the past had taken stands, you know, like Ted Kennedy and all these people, why were they being so complacent about resisting this wrecking job that was going on? And some people kept suspecting that, hey, they've probably got dirt on every member of Congress and they're threatening them. And I don't know, I heard people say that and I said, ah, no, come on, you know, somebody ratted out. And yet, now we know that at least in one instance that is absolutely verifiable because there are transcripts, that the Bush administration did exactly that. They used blackmail against a congressperson. I mean, if that's true, then who's to say how many members of Congress they've blackmailed? And even you might argue that it hardly matters, because if members of Congress knew that the NSA was taping them, an awful lot of them have dirt, you know, whether it's illegal dirt or immoral dirt or whatever, that they have to worry about, and that just the knowledge that the NSA is taping them and is not above extorting them or blackmailing them could be enough to keep them from taking any kind of stance against the administration.
Well, I wonder how many of them were also threatened, not just at risk, but threatened themselves.
Exactly. We don't know, but we now know with objective evidence that the Bush administration was totally capable of doing that because they did it. So, if they did it once, they probably did it more than once. And so I argued at the end that basically we now have to switch to a posture of, you know, guilty until proven innocent, that every member of Congress now should be calling on for a full public inquest hearing, you know, into what this NSA spying was doing, because if they're innocent, they should be damned concerned that this happened and what else the NSA was doing. And if they're not innocent, then you know, we'll know it by their unwillingness to probe the NSA. So I think at this point the stance has to be your member of Congress, your senator is being blackmailed unless they stand up and demand this hearing.
Okay, now I want to talk about something else with you, something that's a local Philly phenomenon. Now, we have listeners in the Philly area and South Jersey and all over the world, really, on the Internet, but there's something happening locally in Philadelphia that is literally bringing in people from all over, because there's something new in Philly at the Franklin Mills Mall.
Oh, yes. The Army Experience Center.
The Army Experience Center is an experiment in recruiting children, basically.
Exactly. What the story there is that Philadelphia was particularly low in generating bodies for the military. The people weren't signing up here in Philly. And so the Army decided to, and the Pentagon decided to test out a new idea, which was to create a really friendly environment with lots of computer games, very high-tech, very high-quality computers, very, very high-quality games, war games, for kids to play for free. And beyond that, it even has these life-size mock-ups of Humvees and Black Hawk helicopters where kids can get on them, man guns that are shooting like, you know, laser markers, and then they run video on the walls at high speed so that it simulates that you're moving and that you're in a real battle with real, you know, people that jump out that you need to shoot and bomb and strafe and whatever. And very realistic and gets your heart pumping. I went over there with my son and his friend, who are both, you know, high school kids, with the idea that we would go and check this place out and, you know, see what it was. And first of all, they sign the kids up and they fill out a lot of information about themselves, you know, mailing address, phone numbers, and all this, so the recruiters can call them at the right time. And they give them a photo ID magnetic card so that when they come in, they can just pass it through and, you know, go straight to the games and the simulators. They have these really nice lounge leather chairs with huge wide screens tuned to all kinds of sports channels for the dads and, you know, some moms who come in there while their kids play the games. And it's all, you know, they bring in free pizza all the time and ply the kids with soda and all of that is free. And, so the kids are just there, you know, on these games killing away. It's pretty stunning. I went on the Humvee with my son and his friend, and and both of whom are very anti-war, and we got on this thing, and they turned it on, and we ended up going through this simulated drive through a urban alley, you know, with all kinds of ramshackle huts on both sides, and these guys dressed as Arabs would jump out at us, you know, armed with guns and stuff. And we were supposed to shoot the guys with the guns or with bombs, and then there would also be civilians, and we were supposed to make sure we didn't shoot the civilians. And at the end of this thing, you know, your heart's pumping because you're really in a battle situation. They shock you with these people jumping out at you and firing at you. It's all very realistic. And at the end of the thing, this guy who's a Iraq veteran himself, who monitors it, came over and tallied up our kills and told us that we had done really well because we only had a 20% error rate. And I said, "What does that mean?" And he said, "Well, you hit, you know, 80% of your shots hit the bad guys." And so I said, "What about the other 20%? And he said, "Oh, you hit the civilians with the other 20%. And he said, "But don't feel bad. That's not a bad figure for real war."
Teaching children that they're going to kill civilians.
And that it's okay. That's just, you know, it's like, you know, well, that's just the way it is. Which, you know, on one level you have to say, well, yeah, that's true. And, you know, with the right instruction, you could say to kids, you see, why war is bad, you know? I mean, you're gonna kill a lot of civilians. You're gonna shoot kids and mothers with babies and all this stuff. But that's not the lesson they're teaching. They're teaching you, well, you know, you gotta harden up a little, cause that's what's gonna happen.
So the story
it was pretty awful.
The story is, this is the first of these experimental recruiting stations in the country.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure they're going to have lots of them because they do work. I mean, they get these kids in there, and they're all fired up. And then, you know, then what they do is they start the guys are very friendly, palsy-wowsy with these kids, and they you know, befriend the kids and get to know them because the kids come back and back. I mean, who wouldn't, you know? It's like free, really good video games. And so they get to know the kids. And then, you know, later they'll call them at home and, you know, they'll invite the parents down. They'll have the pizza. They'll watch sports games in these upholstered seats. And, you know, and eventually they make the pitch, you know, you seem like a real good soldier material kid, you know, and they'll, you know, and then they'll sell them on all the perks of being a soldier, and they're going to recruit them.
So on May 2nd, there's going to be a major event where people are being encouraged to show up early at the mall, spend some time shopping, and get some shopping bags, and then at 2 p.m., everybody's going to come out of the woodwork and converge on the Army Experience Center. And I mean, you're here. This is a big buzz. People are coming from all over, I mean, from other states to do this.
So I hear.
Yeah, if you're local, if you're in Jersey or southeastern Pennsylvania, this is the place to be on May 2nd.
I think this is a really important action because, you know, this is the most insidious kind of recruiting. First of all, they're aiming at kids who are way under enlistment age. They're letting kids in who are like 14 and 15, and they're trying to hook them on the center early so that they'll keep coming back and back and get known. And they're also, you know, taking advantage of the hard economic times by making all these promises that they never keep about, you know, the benefits they'll pay for your school and all of that garbage, which isn't even true. They give a fraction of what it costs to go to college. And
if you want to know more about this so that you can Google, shut down the Army Experience Center. Shut down the Army Experience Center. Google that, and you'll come up with something at afterdowningstreet.org. It's a great website, and you'll see a lot more information on that. I'll be there.
I think I did a piece on it.
Oh.
Rob, I think I did a piece on it that was on Op-Ed News.
Did you?
Yeah, I think we should find out where it is and link to it so that, you know, have some kind of a link to it so people can read about it. Because I did a recounting of what I told you,
cool.
The visit I did with my son, so.
Well, if they get Op-Ed News, then they can go to the search function and type in Army Experience Center, and I'm sure they'll find it.
That's probably true.
OpEdNews.com, yeah. And it's Dave Lindorff, Lindorff. What's your website, Dave?
ThisCan'tBeHappening.net.
ThisCan'tBeHappening.net, okay.
It's on there also. I'm not sure which page it comes up on because I did it a couple of months ago.
You know, I'm looking forward to getting over there. Actually, my son would probably love it. He's into all those computer games. I mean, that's what the teens are do now. They play games where there's a lot of shooting.
Yeah, well, the thing about this was, now, what happened with my son was he was, at the time we went there, he was 15, and they... there are certain games that they weren't letting him do. You have to be 16 to have full access. So I guess the bloodiest games are off limits if you're under 16. But once you're 16, the things are very realistic. And my son said that, you know, he's knowledgeable about this stuff. I'm not. He's really into his video games, and he said that the quality of the games was very, very high. So they're using state-of-the-art computers.
What they do is they look for the kids who are the very best at these, and they literally recruit them because of their video game skills. Because, you know, if you think about it, what's happening in Pakistan now? There are drones that are firing missiles at people who are Taliban or whoever. Some kid, some 20-year-old kid, is probably in South Florida at a command center controlling that drone, and it's almost seamlessly identical to playing a video game, except there are real missiles killing real people.
That's right. That's absolutely right. And there was a report about how they were doing this kind of stuff in Baghdad, you know, doing the targeting for the planes, not just the drones, on houses and stuff, and they were basing it on, you know, the kids were making the decision, these 20-year-old kids were making decisions based on data coming in from the field telling them that, you know, there was a cell phone conversation and it said this, that, or the other thing. The translators are usually like 20 years old and have only had a year or two of Arabic. They don't know what they're really hearing. And people are getting killed right and left through, like, idiotic decisions being made by these kids who are totally incapable of deciding whether it's friend, foe, innocent, you know, whatever. And then, you know, they're insulated from the consequences of their actions, because it's just, to them, it's like a video game. They're not seeing the real blood and guts results of what they're doing on the screens. But you're right, they're really
video
looking for
games
kids that are...
that are almost seamlessly and identical to the control systems that are killing people in Pakistan and Afghanistan and Iraq, operated by what amounts to close to children, 19, 20, 21, 22-year-old military personnel who are playing video games with real life, real blood, real destruction. This is Rob Cole, Bottom Up Radio Show, WNJC 1360 AM, reaching Metro Philly, South Jersey, and the rest of the universe through the Internet. I'm talking to David Lindorf. And what's the name of your website again?
ThisCan'tBeHappening.net.
ThisCan'tBeHappening.net. And David has been to the Army Experience Center with his son and has seen the horror of a recruiting system that is designed to be like eye candy to children. It's a mess. When does this end? I mean, I started this evening talking about torture, how when these lawyers justified torture for armed combatants, they really made it justified, and this is the opinion of lawyers, for any policeman to use torture on any prisoner in America.
There was another story I did yesterday that addressed something to do with this that's really important. Bybee, you know, Jay Bybee, who wrote the initial memo that justified torture. Pardon?
This is a judge, right? He's now a judge.
Yeah, now he's left. After that, he was quickly run up the ranks. He was appointed in 2002 as a, once he'd done the dirty work of this memo, Bush appointed him a federal judge, and then a year later he was quickly appointed appellate judge, so he's now on the Ninth Circuit court as an appellate judge. And he, I thought I would check out what his opinions are, because, you know, appellate judges write these opinions, and they're you know, precedent-setting opinions, so I just thought if I looked at his opinions, I might well find something contradicting his views about how torture wasn't really torture, you know. And there was this incredible opinion that he issued in a labor case that he was hearing where he said, you know, words are important and they're all we have. They're really all we have to work with. And if we use elasticity to define them into meaning the opposite of what they really mean, then we can no longer be taken seriously. That was the quote. And, you know, if they do end up impeaching him and holding hearings on impeachment, they really ought, the Congress ought to really read that back to him and say, you know, what did you exactly mean by this? Because that's what he did. For 48 pages, he redefined words. He said that torture wasn't torture if, you know, there wasn't organ failure. He said, you know, and death, near death. He said that severe meant, you know, close to death. And he also said that if you didn't have serious intent to cause the pain and suffering, then you weren't guilty of violating the Geneva Conventions. And he took it even a step further and said, well, even if you had a serious intention, if you honestly believed that what you were doing wasn't going to, wasn't torture, then it wasn't torture.
Yeah, well, we've got a nation inflicted with probably thousands of people like him embedded into the country, continuing to wreak damage to our Constitution and our rights. Dave, thanks so much for being with us.
Rob, thanks for having me on.
It's a pleasure. Jason, I think I heard you announce yourself.
Yes. How are you, Rob? Good to be with you.
Great to have you here. Jason Leopold is another one, writer who writes regularly with opednews.com, and he's got his own website. What's the name of your website, Jason?
It's called The Public Record, and it's www.pubrecord.org.
All right.
You've been working your butt off lately, I'll tell you.
Yeah, I've been working my butt off for several years now.
Yeah, the articles you've been churning out lately have been incredible.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah. So what do you know?
Well, you know, I've been working obviously for the past probably a little over a year. I've been working really focusing heavy on the issue of torture, if you want to call it. You know, at first it was an issue. Now it seems to be, you know, evidence coming out to underscore the fact that. You know, these were war crimes. I started with a story back in last February, as a matter of fact. And it was basically explaining you guys just spoke about the Bybee memo. But it was actually Jay Bybee and John Yoo jointly who had written the torture memos. And John Yoo's now a professor of law, constitutional law, at Berkeley and over at Chapman University in Orange, California. You know, so I did a little, checked out how he came up with the legal justification for torture. And, I found that he actually based it, of all things, on an obscure 2000 health benefit statute. And basically, this is... Many people that really have no idea, where this came from. And it came from a health benefit statute. And when he defines in his torture memo, that it can't be torture unless it's, the pain is equal to, death, organ failure, if you look back on where he got that from, it was in a health benefit statute. But he actually twisted the law there. And used it, to justify torture, recently have just been covering this topic pretty heavily. There's so much to write about, and in fact, I just put out a couple of stories now that many people, recently I just published a few stories, but many people are questioning, obviously, should. Should there be prosecutions? And should there be prosecutions of the CIA interrogators who were just following the Justice Department advice? It's important to know, and I actually just, as I said, just published a story, is back in 1983, the Justice Department, the same agency that churned out this letter, actually, these torture memos, actually prosecuted a sheriff in the state of Texas and three of his deputies for waterboarding prisoners. And during that trial, one of the deputies had used the basically the Nuremberg defense, saying that, in fact, I didn't know that this was illegal. I was just following orders. But the jury didn't buy it. And, the sheriff got sentenced to 10 years in prison and three deputies received 4 years. And, basically they were torturing, waterboarding and torturing prisoners to get them to confess to crimes. So there's precedent here. But, just to go along with that on the legal side of things, when you look at the memos, this is really important. When you look at the Bybee memos and the Bradbee memos, Stephen Bradbury, the former head of the Office of Legal Counsel, and John Yoo, what you find in those memos is this actual case, this 1983 case, U.S. versus Parker. It's missing. It's not cited at all. In fact, there's no precedent that's cited in a number of these memos. And had they done so, had they actually cited these, these cases, it absolutely would have. Obviously, they wouldn't have been able to justify this. They wouldn't have been able to authorize torture. So this goes to the, not only providing the poorhouse with the White House with poor legal advice. I said the poorhouse, the White House with poor legal advice. It actually, is a key. Point of the Justice Department watchdog report in determining if they violated professional standards. So, you know, we're focusing all on the torture, and that's important, but there's, you know, quite a backstory that goes along with this. And so that's what I've been working on.
So are you saying that John Yoo and his associates engaged in legal malpractice?
That, you know, that essentially would be, you know, what I guess you could say that's sort of what would be the case. It's really difficult to prove, obviously, intent. But one of the things that's being investigated or has been investigated by the Office of Professional Responsibility is the Ethics Office that's still sitting on a report, by the way. This is probably one of the last big reports that will come out regarding torture, and I'll tell you that you'll see this very soon, if not within the next 2 weeks, very shortly thereafter. And basically, what they investigated was whether, you know, okay, did they perform, you know, essentially legal malpractice, or did they purposely, you know, twist things around and not fail to cite, you know, existing case law in order to give the White House, you know, what it wants, basically fixing the law around the policy. So, you know, if there was no intent and they just forgot it and they failed to cite these cases, well, that absolutely is would you know, to some people would be a clear-cut case of malpractice, by, you know, for lack of a better or another term, because, you know, their jobs were to act as independent-minded attorneys, not as advocates for administration policy. It's a really important point to make because, you know, there's a separation. You know, this is the Justice Department and the White House. In fact, you know, one of my big criticisms right now is the fact that, you know, people are writing to Obama, Joe Lieberman, John McCain, Lindsey Graham today writing a letter saying don't allow a special prosecutor. This is not Obama's decision to make. In fact, Rahm Emanuel was absolutely out of order when he spoke on Sunday saying that we don't want prosecutions. That's fine that you don't want prosecutions, but, you know, this is the type of behavior and attitude we saw, you know, during the Bush administration where – they politicized the Justice Department, and that obviously led to the firings of U.S. attorneys and prosecutions of key political figures. So it really is not Obama's decision to make. Certainly, he's the president; he can have influence, but the Justice Department is independent, and you know, so. We'll obviously, you know, see what happens with the report and what it leads to, you know, in terms of whether the lawyers themselves will be held accountable for, you know, for twisting things around.
Do you have any idea when that report's going to come out?
You know, it's done. The report has been completed. In fact, it was completed last December, and it was due to be delivered to Senator Sheldon Whitehouse and Dick Durbin, because they had actually asked for an investigation into the creation of these torture memos. And the Justice Department had wrote back to them last year saying, well, in fact, we've been investigating this for 4 years. They received a note earlier this year that the report, in fact, had been completed, but Michael Mukasey and his deputy at the time blocked it from being released because they wanted John Yoo, Jay Bybee, and Stephen Bradbury to provide written responses to respond to the report's findings. Everyone who I've spoken with, and I've actually, you know, spoken to Sheldon Whitehouse's office as well, everyone believes that this report is devastating, and that there will be a recommendation to state bars to investigate further and could possibly lead to disbarment. So there is a question right now as to, is this, you know, are they watering things down? What did the responses say? Will it have any impact on the report? From what I know, that it, you know, we're talking about within the next 2 weeks. That's what they said. But, you know, these things change dramatically. However, with the release of the Senate Armed Services Committee report late last night, coming, you know, right on the heels of the Justice Department torture memos, I think that you'll start to see a flood. You know, the floodgates are clearly open, and I think that all these reports, they're going to try to get them all out at once. Clearly, excuse me, the administration does not want, you know, this is a distraction for them. You know, let's face it, you know, they don't want to have to deal with this. So better to get everything out now than in piecemeal, you know, throughout the months. And so I think you'll see the report shortly.
Now, I noticed that now that some of these reports and hidden memos are out, the writers of the memos are able to talk about what they said, including the ones who opposed torture.
Right, right. Yeah, there are quite a bit. You know, Philip Zelikow, I think I'm pronouncing his last name correctly. You know, he worked at the you know, with Condoleezza Rice, and he had a dissenting opinion on these interrogation methods. In fact, if you look at the Senate Armed Services Committee report, which came out last night, that's the report that details the not only the genesis of you can call them enhanced interrogations. I think it's safe to say that this was torture, but it actually has quite a bit of dissenting opinions from military lawyers who said, you know, this is against the law. You cannot use these techniques. And those lawyers were overruled by people like Donald Rumsfeld and Dick Cheney, and in favor of the legal opinions produced by the Justice Department. And I think that you know, it just shows you just how, you know, politicized that office really was.
Tell me something. What's the worst case scenario that could happen to Rumsfeld and Cheney?
You know, I think the worst case scenario clearly would be, you know, they're sent to prison. The likelihood of that happening, I would say right now, is zero. There's absolutely, I don't even think that there would be a criminal investigation. But I think that, you know, for all practical purposes, the worst thing that can happen is that they'll have a, you know, Dick Cheney's a very rich man, so he doesn't need to work. And the same goes for Donald Rumsfeld. You know, they're basically, the worst thing could now is to be hauled up in front of any sort of commission and forced to testify under oath in front of the world. I think that, you know, for most people, they'd say, you know, would like to see him in prison. But,
Jason, all the best we can hope for is they're going to...
You know, listen, I think that, that sadly, Rob, that is, you know, look, you know, it's clear that there's plenty of evidence to prosecute. I think that any prosecutor certainly would... you know, would have his or her work cut out for them, but let's face the reality. You know, this is an administration. You know, Obama has, and it's disappointing because he has indicated that he's not in favor of any of this. So the worst that can happen, you know, to them is basically that they get slapped on the wrist. That's the sad reality of this. You know, if there is a special prosecutor, who will the special prosecutor investigate? I mean, right now everyone is talking about the lawyers who created the legal framework, John Yoo, Jay Bybee. But what about Dick Cheney? You know, what about Donald Rumsfeld? This report last night makes it clear. This is a report, by the way, that was approved. A bipartisan report, unanimously approved by the Senate Armed Services Committee. And it makes it abundantly clear that Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld were the principal architects of torture, and that they used it, that it started in December of 2001, the framework, that it was being used to try to torture techniques were used to try to get intelligence to show a link between Iraq and al-Qaeda, and that you know, they kept going back and back and forth, and they kept applying pressure to these interrogators, and so all the evidence is there. However, I mean, the likelihood of investigating a former vice president, Dick Cheney, I just think that it's, we haven't seen anyone. Look, we haven't seen Democrats for the most part. We've seen a few Democrats come out and say, hey, we need to have prosecutions, but just a few. I mean, John Conyers has had proposed back in January a blue ribbon commission to, investigate this. He got 27 co-sponsors. That bill's still alive. I mean, it's a resolution. It's still out there. 27 co-sponsors. I mean, my point is that Democrats don't even want this. I mean, think about this for a moment. Nancy Pelosi, Speaker of the House, has yet to make any real statement on this. However, when the New York Times revealed that the National Security Agency, when they revealed this last week, were, overstepped their, bounds or legal guidelines, and swept up people in wiretaps, Pelosi demanded accountability, demanded investigations, and yet she as well as others, have not really come out with the same sort of statements when it comes to torture. Part of the reason, Rob, that they're not doing that is because they were briefed on this very early on. I have to say that's my opinion. I don't know exactly if that's a fact. That's why they're not doing it, rather. But they were briefed. They knew about this. Nancy Pelosi said a while back when she was on the Intelligence Committee, when she was briefed on the techniques, they told her about waterboarding, but she never thought that they would use it. I don't buy that, and I don't think the public buys that. So I think that for many Democrats, what they knew and when they knew it, if that were to be revealed, I think it would probably be quite shocking, because they didn't do anything about it. They didn't stop it. They didn't insist upon.
Jason.
Yeah.
They didn't do anything about it. They didn't stop it.
Boy, right.
You could say that about so many things that the Democrats failed.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so the bottom line is that, again, just going back to your original question, what's the worst that could happen? The only way that anything can happen is if somebody has the political will to allow it to happen. And that is non-existent right now. There should be, with the release of the torture memos and just the report alone last night, there should be an outcry among lawmakers that this took place. And yet it's sort of silent to some degree.
Now, what do the Republicans say? How are they? I mean, they're very critical about this.
They are still staunch defenders of George Bush, and absolutely, do not support anything. First of all, they don't support Obama on a number of different things, but they did not support his decision to release the memos. They claim that he, put national security at risk. They claim that these techniques worked, actually sidestepping the fact that it violates Geneva Conventions and other laws. So they're resistant. And here's the other thing. They're also pretty loud. So the Democrats, while still in the majority, while now in the White House and both houses, still have their, you know, run around with their tails between their legs and act like they're in the minority, and really have not stood up to, you know, fight back at this. I mean, I have to say that I was kind of surprised at one, you know, particular Democrat who, you know, would, some people may define her as a Republican for, you know, for some of her policy decisions, and that's Dianne Feinstein. Dianne Feinstein actually sent a letter to Obama on Monday saying, reserve judgment on prosecutions until my committee finishes its investigation. You know, her counterpart on that committee, the Senate Intelligence Committee, Kit Bond, you know, he went off on Obama on the same day that Feinstein sent this letter. You know, he basically said that Obama's message to the CIA is CYA, cover, you know, cover your rear. And, you know, so there is a absolute disconnect, clearly. I mean, it's sort of outrageous if you think about it. I mean, these, you know, they're defending torture. I mean, that's what's so unbelievable is that's what they have. But again, you know, they've got loud voices, they've got Fox News, they've got Rush Limbaugh, and they're able to disseminate their message, you know, to a degree that progressives are unable to. So when they speak, it does make a loud sound.
How about the rest of the world? Are you getting any idea of what the international community is saying about all this?
Yeah, they're, you know, it's an outrage, and they are outraged. I mean, look, in the UK right now, they're launching an investigation. You know, the government has been forced to launch an investigation into you know, MI5's role in you know, British intelligence role in torture, and you know, people, there's a feeling that great that Obama released this, good for him, but now that the evidence, the it's all out in the open, people are demanding accountability. And that's people all over the world. Certainly, you know, in countries that, you know, we accuse of, you know, serious human rights violations. You know, the fact is that we really don't know the whole story. We know what these memos said. We know what they, you know, what they authorized. But, you know, I actually put out a story the other day. I think it was Monday. I published a story. And it was based on a still, by the way, still classified CIA Inspector General report. And that report actually says that some detainees were killed during interrogations. So, you know, we don't even have half the story, Rob. I mean, because there are still, you know, prisoners that are missing.